Good morning, everyone, and thank you for being here. 2 years ago, the acting attorney general asked me to serve as special counsel, and he created the special counsel's office. The appointment order directed the office to investigate Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. This included investigating any links or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the Trump campaign. Now, I have not spoken publicly during our investigation. I'm speaking out today because our investigation is complete. The Attorney General has made the report on our investigation largely public. We are formally closing the special counsel's office, and as well, I'm resigning from the Department of Justice to return to private life. I'll make a few remarks about the results of our work. But beyond these few remarks, it is important that the office's written work speak for itself. Let me begin where the appointment order begins, and that is interference in the 2016 presidential election. As alleged by the grand jury in an indictment, Russian intelligence officers who were part of the Russian military launched a concerted attack on our political system. The indictment alleges that they used sophisticated cyber techniques to hack into computers and networks used by the Clinton campaign. They stole private information and then released that information through fake online and identities and through the organization WikiLeaks. The releases were designed and timed to interfere with our election and to damage a presidential candidate. And at the same time, as the grand jury alleged in a separate indictment, a private Russian entity engaged in a social media operation where Russian citizens posed as Americans in order to influence an election. These indictments contain allegations, and we are not commenting on the guilt or the innocence of any specific defendant. Every defendant is presumed innocent unless and until proven guilty. The indictments allege, and the other activities in our report describe, efforts to interfere in our political system. They needed to be investigated and understood, and that is among the reasons why the Department of Justice established our office. That is also a reason we investigated efforts to obstruct the investigation. The matters we investigated were of paramount importance. It was critical for us to obtain full and accurate information from every person we questioned. When a subject of an investigation obstructs that investigation or lies to investigators, it strikes at the core of their government's effort to find the truth and hold wrongdoers accountable. Let me say a word about the report. The report has two parts, addressing the two main issues we were asked to investigate. The first volume of the report details numerous efforts emanating from Russia to influence the election. This volume includes a discussion of the Trump campaign's response to this activity, as well as our conclusion that there was insufficient evidence to charge a broader conspiracy. And in the second volume, the report describes the results and analysis of our obstruction of justice investigation involving the president. The order appointing me special counsel authorized us to investigate actions that could obstruct the investigation. And we conducted that investigation, and we kept the Office of the Acting Attorney General apprised of the progress of our work. And as set forth in the report, after that investigation, if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. The introduction to the Volume 2 of our report explains that decision. It explains that under long-standing department policy, a president cannot be charged with a federal crime while he is in office. That is unconstitutional. Even if the charge is kept under seal and hidden from public view, that too is prohibited. The special counsel's office is part of the Department of Justice, and by regulation, it was bound by that department policy. Charging the president with a crime was therefore not an option we could consider. The department's written opinion explaining the policy makes several important points that further informed our handling of the obstruction investigation. Those points are summarized in our report, and I will describe two of them for you. First, the opinion explicitly permits the investigation of a sitting president because it is important to preserve evidence while memories are fresh and documents available. Among other things, that evidence could be used if there were co-conspirators who could be charged now. And second, the opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing. And beyond department policy, we were guided by principles of fairness. It would be unfair to potentially accuse somebody of a crime when there can be no court resolution of the actual charge. So that was Justice Department policy. Those were the principles under which we operated. And from them, we concluded that we would not reach a determination one way or the other about whether the president committed a crime. That is the office's final position, and we will not comment on any other conclusions or hypotheticals about the president. We conducted an independent criminal investigation and reported the results to the Attorney General, as required by department regulations. The Attorney General then concluded that it was appropriate to provide our report to Congress and to the American people. At one point in time, I requested that certain portions of the report be released. The Attorney General preferred to make the entire report public all at once, and we appreciate that the Attorney General made the report largely public, and I certainly do not question the Attorney General's good faith in that decision. Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I am making that decision myself. No one has told me whether I can or should testify or speak further about this matter. There has been discussion about an appearance before Congress. Any testimony from this office would not go beyond our report. It contains our findings and analysis and the reasons for the decisions we made. We chose those words carefully, and the work speaks for itself. And the report is my testimony. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress. In addition, access to our underlying work product is being decided in a process that does not involve our office. So beyond what I've said here today and what is contained in our written work, I do not believe it is appropriate for me to speak further about the investigation or to comment on the actions of the Justice Department or Congress. And it's for that reason I will not be taking questions today as well. Now, before I step away, I want to thank the attorneys, the FBI agents, the analysts, the professional staff who helped us conduct this investigation in a fair and independent manner. These individuals, who spent nearly 2 years with the special counsel's office, were of the highest integrity. And I will close by reiterating the central allegation of our indictments, that there were multiple systematic efforts to interfere in our election. And that allegation deserves the attention of every American. Thank you. Thank you for being here today.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller speaking from the Justice Department, leaving now as he said he would. without taking questions. The special counsel saying several things, relaying what the report found, the two volumes, but perhaps the most striking sentence, to me anyway, was the report is my testimony. In other words, he will not be going to Capitol Hill to testify. He says he has not made that decision upon the direction of anyone else. He said that anything that he were to say before Congress is already in the report. The report is my testimony. And so there you have that, the word from the special counsel looking into the Russian interference into the election in 2016. Certainly more on that coming through the day. We'll take a break now. Come back and check your money, sports, traffic, and weather, all next on WGN.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. 312-981-7200 is our number. It's our phone number and our text line. You can call us or text us. And I would love to hear from you because I'm anxious to get your thoughts on what we just saw and heard from Robert Mueller.
I have a question.
Go on.
What was the point of that?
Well, it was sort of a farewell that it was over. And, you know, I think the point of it was to say that he wasn't going to go on Capitol Hill and testify.
We've been hearing for weeks, people keep saying, why aren't we hearing from Robert Mueller? He's right in the center of this. He's the key ingredient in this cake. Why are we not hearing from him? So we heard from him, but
it didn't. He didn't add anything that we've already known.
America just kissed its sister again.
Yes.
And which has happened so many times here, because if you are, if you are an anti-Trump person or think the president broke the law, the special counsel said that if they had any confidence that he didn't commit a crime, they certainly would have said that, and they didn't say that. If you are a defender of the president and say he should be exonerated, the special counsel clearly said that they couldn't charge him. They can't do it. In fact, he used the term unconstitutional, which I'd not heard before. I knew it was a Justice Department guideline, but I suppose it's only logical that if it's a guideline, that's because they would consider it unconstitutional. I don't know that it's been tested. But if you are a supporter of the president, you I would imagine feel pretty good about this,
yeah,
because you know now that the special counsel Mueller is not going to go up on Capitol Hill and answer questions to members of Congress, the people to whom he presented the report to the Justice Department, but it would be up to the members of the Congress to take the next step, and they will not be hearing from the special counsel.
So, Steve, I just want to make sure I'm understanding
this
right.
Can I just correct one thing?
Sure, absolutely.
He's saying he won't do it. I suppose the House or someone could always subpoena him and try to go that route, too.
So based on what you just said, based on what Robert Mueller said 5 minutes ago, that means that it would have been unconstitutional. So if they had steadfast evidence, they had absolute positive evidence that Donald Trump was involved in this, there was really nothing they could do despite that.
They could clear him, but they couldn't convict him.
What was the point of the whole investigation?
Remember, this all started because of Russian interference, and there was great evidence found there, and that was volume one of the report. The Justice Department cannot convict him. The Congress can. It would go to impeachment. The Justice Department, or try him at any rate. And the Justice Department, doesn't have the power to do it according to their own guidelines. That is left for impeachment. And so the part of this story was to gather evidence for any impeachment possibility.
But even impeachment, as we've established on the show, even impeachment, it doesn't mean what it should mean.
Well,
I mean, and you can, this is the one time that I'll allow the what about Bill and Hillary defense. Bill Clinton was impeached and remained president.
Well, he was impeached, but he wasn't removed from office. So the House impeaches, and then the Senate votes whether or not to remove from office.
Yes, impeachment is the process by which a legislative body levels charges against a government official. It does not mean removal from office. It's only a statement of charges akin to indictment in criminal law. So President Clinton went through the impeachment process.
He was impeached.
But see, that's where I get so confused.
The wording
confused.
Is strange.
Yes.
Well, it's only strange because we equate impeachment with removal.
Right, right. Can I, and Steve, if you don't know this, I'm sorry, it's an unfair question if you don't know this, but why was it established that no sitting president could be indicted in something
well,
like this?
Well, you know, I think that's something that's an interesting thing, and we'll see if it's revisited, but I think Mueller's... I don't know the answer. I was going to say his rationale for not saying whether or not he should have been charged was it would be unfair to say the president obstructed justice when he could not then go to trial and defend himself. So it would be unfair for them to draw that conclusion in their report. It's been standing in the past where, you know, the job of the president is too important to bother it, to be bothered with, you know, lawsuits and things like that.
But it seems such a strange fail-safe to have in place, because then, I'm not exaggerating, couldn't a president kill a guy and people go, well, what can you, on any street, but let's say Fifth Avenue. Couldn't a president do something that horrific and then everybody go, yeah, but what can you do? He's the president.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I don't know what the solution is, but I mean, think of it. So let's take Donald Trump's name out of this.
All right.
Strong feelings on either side of that. But you have a president who, and again, this is a hypothetical, who colluded with a foreign government to get elected, okay?
Yeah.
And then she's elected. And so she was elected because of illegal acts. According to the position of the Justice Department today, she could never be removed or punished from that.
That doesn't seem right.
It doesn't. I don't know what the solution is, but and I don't have much confidence that Congress will come up with one. Impeachment would be the solution. But we can see, right, but impeachment, you know, has less to do with law, violating laws, than it does with politics, clearly.
Prior to Robert Mueller speaking today, you had people saying that Mueller did not really exonerate Donald Trump.
He didn't. He said he didn't.
But then, you know, his supporters and Donald Trump said, I was fully exonerated.
Right.
But today, why wasn't that brought up? Why did he say?
He said, and I've got this scribbled here, so it's not the exact quote, but he said, you know, if we had absolute confidence that the president did not commit a crime, we would have said so. And they did not say that.
So it was a polite way of saying that that whole process.
That there was evidence there that the president committed. Most directly what he's saying is that this report certainly did not prove the president not guilty of obstruction of justice.
Is it akin to, you know, everything comes back to baseball, Wendy. Is it akin to when there's a play in baseball and they go to the videotape and there's not enough to reverse it? Is it similar to that? Where they go, well, we think he did it, but we can't. It's such a close call when we watch the replay over and over and over again that we can't really say he's guilty.
Tie goes to the president.
Yeah,
not really, because what Mueller is saying is, according to Justice Department guidance, even if they knew he did it, if they have videotape of him
couldn't do a
kicking
thing.
A cat,
right?
You know, he or she can't be charged, so
because
they couldn't
they're the
say
president.
It. They could say we have evidence that she didn't kick the cat, but we can't say that they did commit a crime.
Bunch of texts coming in. That speech clearly states that Trump did obstruct justice, but there's nothing they can do about it this time, left open for further conviction. That's just crazy if that is really the case. Why go through this whole 2-year investigation?
If your hands are tied,
yeah,
at the end of it,
then don't waste everyone's time.
Well, everyone's time wasn't wasted, Wendy. There were hundreds of charges and indictments in this case. There were maybe 40 people convicted. I don't know the exact number.
Oh, I guess, yeah.
So there was a lot more to it than just the president obstructing justice.
But as it's been pointed out, nearly everyone around him was convicted of this, but he was not, right?
Paul Manafort was convicted. Michael Cohen was convicted of a crime, pleaded guilty.
Yeah.
His first national security advisor, Flynn, pleaded guilty. Rick Gates pleaded guilty. So there were a number of his close aides who did plead guilty, but again, not directly to colluding with the Russians.
Steve,
some with lying to Congress and things like that.
There's a text that I find fascinating. I think I know the answer, but I'd rather hear it from you. Can Donald Trump be charged after he leaves office? The answer to that is no, isn't it?
He can be charged after he leaves office, as long as the statute of limitations hasn't expired.
Which is how long, do we know?
Well, it depends on the crime. You know, it varies on the crime. Now, then it gets really political, and by political I mean, you know, future of the country sort of thing. One of the things President Trump has done is fueled this threat to charge Hillary Clinton after defeating her in office.
Right.
And that's really damaging to the, I think, future of the country. If you have newly elected presidents convicting or prosecuting their political opponents once they get in. So
yeah.
If Donald Trump is not reelected next year and a Democrat wins, it goes beyond just the crime to then try to convict him for something. I think that would be pretty...
It sets a bad precedent.
Yeah, it'd have to be a very high bar. It'd have to really have kicked the cat.
A William Barr or just a high bar?
Higher than William Barr.
Okay. So was there anything that we
what
just...
What did we glean from this?
That's what I was going to say.
I think,
are we any better off or worse off than we were a half an hour ago?
Look, I'm not an expert on it. I just listen to it, and we'll hear from the people who can decipher the language more closely than I can. But for me, this line is the report is my testimony, with the idea that there's no reason for him to go to Capitol Hill. I think people, had really hoped that he would go to the Hill and fill out some of these questions. Like, if he weren't president, would you have charged him? Things like that. We won't hear Robert Mueller answer those questions now.
You know what was a very telling moment was at the very end when he said words to the effect of, we won't speak about this again. I'm done with this. And I'm not taking any questions. Because that's paramount to this, is taking questions. Because there's 1,000 questions.
With no answers.
With zero answers.
Right. His answer was that all of the, presumably all the questions are answered in his report. His report speaks for what they found.
Frustrating?
Two texts that I want to do the, both sides of it. What are you crybabies going to do when you don't like the next president? Are we going to listen to 4 more years of your BS and nagging the president of the United States? Love him or hate him, people voted for him. Shut your freaking mouth. People did vote for him. I'm just curious, and I throw this out here every once in a while. If you did vote for him and you've changed your thoughts, we'd like to talk to you. 312-981-7200. Someone else says...
How about if you didn't vote for him and you've changed your thoughts? Right?
Right.
Yeah. I'm so sad. Here's another one. I'm so sad to be an American right now. We were just basically told the president is above the law. We kind of were.
Yeah.
And Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, if she was in office, if she did some things that weren't right, I would move forward in wanting to go to do something about it as well. It's not just Donald Trump, but I've not seen this behavior before.
But wouldn't you, let's say hypothetically, you voted for Hillary Clinton and everything that's transpired in the last couple of years happened under Hillary Clinton. Wouldn't you have jumped ship a long time ago? Wouldn't you have said, wow, every day a new scandal?
Boy, I was bamboozled. That's what I would say.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just a greater divide now.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Come on, people.
When he says he'll never talk about this again, does that mean until his book comes out?
Or until he's subpoenaed?
No, I don't. I don't believe that he'll be writing a book. Now, but again, even though he said that, and I kind of fell for it at first, he is subject to subpoena. I think he could fight it, but we'll have to see what Jerry Nadler in the House Judiciary Committee plans to pursue him at any rate. Now, what he just said was, I'm not going to say anything.
Right.
That's not in this report. So
Right. It
might not be worth much to the Democrats to do that. Might look worse for them to try to get him to say something than it would be for that just to leave it alone. I don't know.
Can't he just say, I don't want to testify. That's it. Goodbye. I'm taking my ball and going home.
Well, but you can be compelled by subpoena and a court could force you to testify. Again, if he sits there and the question is, do you think the president should have been indicted? He would say, it's not within my authority to indict the president. Did he do enough to be indicted? The report speaks for itself. I don't know that you're going to get anything from him to get him up on the Hill.
All right. Finally, 708. I pose the questions. Here's an answer. I have not changed my opinion of Trump being a good president. Hillary Clinton committed more crimes. Bill Clinton was impeached. The same system works both ways.
How would Hillary Clinton have committed more crimes?
Because of her emails. Lock her up, Bill.
I guess.
Lock her up.
All right. We'll take a break.
We should just take a break. Yes.
Come back in 6 months and start over. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy.
By the way, one other point.
Yes.
If you want to really tune into the intricacies of it and you missed it in the first 10 minutes, it's up online, too. You can watch it at WGRadio.com.
All right. Are there more answers when you watch it a second time, Steve?
If you do it backwards.
Then there are.
Where's James Holzhauer to explain
right,
this to me?
Right. All right. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and I need to be showed the funny.
That's why, Wendy, that's why Pat McGann is here, to cheer you up.
Good.
Pat, cheer Wendy up.
All right, I'll start dancing.
Do your funny Pat dance.
People yes, I might.
So much.
You are busy, busy, busy. I'm following you on social media, and you're at a new city every night, a new venue. You're just moving and shaking.
Yeah, it's been kind of crazy. I've been touring with Sebastian Maniscalco, and we've been going all over this great land.
Pat, sometimes a comedian will open for a music group or a performer, a singer. Sometimes they'll open for a comedian. Do you have a preference on that? Is it better for you one way or another?
Oh, comedian for sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I haven't opened for a lot of musical acts.
Yeah, I was
going to
question that. Do they typically put comedians in front of musicians?
Yes.
That's kind of not,
not as
opinion.
Much as they used to, I think, but they do like in theater settings. But I've never really, I can't even think of one.
Paul Reiser was on with Steve Cochran, and he said he likes to mix it up, so he puts a musician. I think if you're in the mindset to go see a comic, you want to be there. If you're there to see music, you don't want to see a comic.
Right, right.
What about a CPA? Would you ever put a CPA up in front of a comic or a band?
In tax season, maybe.
Tax
maybe
season,
in
like
April.
April, early April?
Yeah.
That would be very comical for about 30 seconds.
A comedian for exactly the reasons you're saying, Wendy. Like, they're there to see comedy. That's
it gets
they're
in the mindset. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? Yeah, but you've never opened for a band in all the years
Beyonce,
you've done stand-up.
Just that one time,
I don't
right?
think I have. I honestly haven't.
Did you used to?
Oh, yeah, quite a bit.
Like, who were some of the acts?
The Beach Boys, Michael Bolton. I had quite a few of
really?
Them. Really? Yeah.
See, this is why he brought it up. He wants to talk about... Go ahead, Bill. Tell us what you did. Talk about Michael Bolton. And
really?
You won't hear a word out of me about Michael Bolton.
Michael Bolton's
where'd
lame.
You open for the Beach Boys at? That's legendary.
Pheasant Run.
Really?
Yeah.
The Beach Boys played Pheasant Run?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a New Year's Eve show. And I said to one of the young girls backstage, this is so exciting, opening for your dad. I've been a fan since I was a little kid. And she goes, my dad? It was one of the Beach Boys' girlfriend who was 32 years younger than he was.
Oh, gosh.
And you still got to perform that
yeah,
night?
Despite that.
That is great.
Yeah.
I did see John Tesh at a show that we were doing in California. He sang for a little bit.
That's not that exciting. Oh, yeah. He's in the same Bolton category.
Yeah. That's what made me think of it. I was tempted to say,
John
come on
Tesh,
up here and sing it.
You're the reason I got into show business.
Yeah, right.
It's so funny he went Beach Boys and Bolton, and you and I are like, tell us about the Beach Boys.
Come on. But it's still fun. I mean, you're opening for Sebastian some of the nights, but you're doing your own thing on other nights.
Yes, yeah, I'm still doing my own thing, and that's kind of what I'm doing the next few months because we're taking a little bit of a hiatus because the Sebastian tour did take up most of my time. It was significant touring. But yeah, when I'm not with him, I'm doing my own thing.
I have questions for you that I always ask Bill, and he answers for me. But first of all, I think you're so incredibly funny, and I want to know how long you've been doing this.
I've been doing it for 11 years.
It seems like it's been longer. You just seem very polished. No.
To us, it seems like
so
you've been
it
way longer.
So my other question is, how old were you when you started doing this?
I was 31.
So a little later
I
than most.
Late, yeah.
How much did you weigh?
That was your question.
It's a good question.
I said 162.
162?
How do you keep it off?
Yeah,
you
know, that's a great question from Steve.
I remember last time I weighed 162. I was, where was that? That was like sniper fire.
Steve Bertrand. He's up in the little box.
I always go through this when I come in. Hi, Steve. So I had a career. I was in sales. I was traveling
and
a little bit with that.
Doing well.
Yeah, I had
very
a decent
successful.
Job. And then the economy kind of went to hell and lost some business. And at that time, I was doing open mics. And I was like, let me just concentrate on this. And I kind of wrote out the sales job. Because it was a commission job.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just... I didn't feel too bad about not working that hard at it.
What was the reaction of family members as you were leaving a sure thing for something that
great
was
question.
Not a sure thing? Thank you. Thank you.
Well, hey, I got laid off like 4 months before I got married.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, and then I got a job. My buddy got me a job at one of his restaurants here in town at Let Us Entertain You at Paris Club.
Yeah.
And I started working there, and I kind of did that for probably 8 months, and then I was able to transition kind of full-time to stand-up.
You did it fast, though. It takes most guys, it takes a lot longer than it took you.
Well, I lucked out. I had a great gig at Zany's. I was the house MC, which they've always done at the other clubs, Pheasant Run. And they had Rosemont at the time. They had Vernon Hills, but like John DeCoste, who's on with Steve all the time, he was a house MC at Zany's, still is. They had that model for the suburban clubs. They didn't have it at the City Room in Old Town. So when I came along, they're like, "Let's try and do work you as a house MC." And I started getting a ton of work. I was doing like 1 year. I did I think 9 months there.
Wow!
And that was
you
every
learn
night
a lot doing
except
that.
Monday. So learned a ton, got comfortable on stage, was able to do. They wanted me to talk to the crowd, like they encouraged that.
Yeah,
which I was not comfortable with. But once you can start to do that, once you start getting conversational on stage, I think that helps tremendously in just being comfortable up there. And
I love
then
that.
Then you start doing material. So it's kind of funny. Like, I had that, and now I have this gig with Sebastian where I don't do any crowd work. I'm still the opener, but you don't do crowd work in a theater.
It's too big.
Or like a big. So now I've been concentrating on material like the last 2 years touring with him. So it's kind of been both of those two things were great for me development-wise.
You are just really funny. I'm proud of you.
You smell too, Pat.
I feel like I haven't said anything funny yet.
Not yet. Save it for the second half.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
This is a teaser?
Build towards
that. This is how we get people in?
Yeah. Well, I thought that was an interesting story because I've asked you all these questions.
Yeah.
And it's like, where did Pat McGann come from? Because that's
what
we want.
Yeah, what I always say to
Wendy. I know. And I'm like, I need a better answer.
Correct. I just called my parents on the way here because I did the morning news, WGN Morning News.
Yeah.
And I didn't tell them. They're like, why didn't you tell us? And then I told them, well, tune in to WGN.
What'd they say? Are they in? Are they listening?
They're listening, yeah. So I love that you brought up my mom's womb. She'll be very happy.
And they have to be proud. I mean, that's just...
One of them probably.
They're excited. You know, they got me into comedy in a way. They were big comedy fans. They would go to New York City. I remember them going away, like little getaways and coming home, talking about going to clubs. They took us to see Seinfeld as a family.
Oh, nice.
When I was like 15. We saw him out at Pheasant Run in the Mega Center. And so they exposed me to comedy.
Did they have comedy albums that they would listen to or that they'd have you listen to?
Not really.
No?
I remember like Bill Cosby himself like watching that special whenever it was running on cable then. We didn't get cable right when everyone else got it.
Yeah.
Because that was like big time proliferation of stand-up when
yes.
cable came out. And but yeah, we were just always a funny... I mean, I still live in the South Side of Chicago. I mean, there's a million people in my neighborhood funnier than I am. It's just a funny people, funny
yeah.
neighborhood. That's just kind of like the culture.
Why are some areas funnier than others? I agree with you, but why is that, do you think?
I think that they're just, you know, I've developed some theories. I think that cold weather cities are funnier people.
You're right.
I think that, you know, you're forced to be inside. You have to entertain yourselves. You have to entertain the people around you.
Yeah.
And I think that that is... a contributing factor.
And more appreciative because you're bottled up inside so often, so the mere fact of going to a club, it takes some effort.
Yeah.
Right?
And underdogs in society.
Yes.
Are,
if you're struggling financially, too, you come up with something because rich people can just pay people to make them laugh.
Yeah, it's a defense true. Mechanism. It's yeah. a coping mechanism. Yeah,
yeah.
I think it's all...
All true.
And attention. Craving attention.
Yeah, oh, there's that as well. Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
For sure.
Do you put yourself in that bracket? Are you craving attention?
I don't know. I was never like the class clown. I would like come up with ideas that I had like buddies I would unload them on and then they would carry out the... Not that they didn't have ideas themselves, but yeah, we would get into some trouble, but nothing significant.
Are those guys amazed at what you've achieved in the last 11 years or so? Do they go, wow, we thought you were funny, but we didn't think you'd pull this
They
off.
Would never say that to me.
No?
I mean, they do in ways, but you know what I mean.
Are they now giving you
they
material?
They keep me, you know... humble in a way, like they're not yeah. gonna be like, oh, they'll be like, oh, you big shot, you know, saw you on TV, you get a new zip up, you know, just like, we got put a gel on your hair now. What
What's
are you
a
doing?
Zip up, like a hoodie,
yeah,
like
thing, a nice, right? one, like, oh, just, like Pat's wearing,
is that yeah. from the chest up?
Yeah, it's just like a sweatshirt.
And you have a line of those, right? You sell those after the
I
show.
I do. I get like the sweaty pits, so I like to layer up, so it's become my
and dark colors.
Become my yeah,
right? Yeah.
I hear you.
That's a good look.
Put thought behind.
That's
all
a solid
of it.
Look. Pat McGann is here. He's performing at Zany's. Go to zanys.com. All your ticket information is there. Go to his website, patmcgannscomedy.com. More after this. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Pat, you got to go to Schnalla with me.
Man, that sounds
Come
great.
Come with me.
Mouth-watering medallions.
Wendy, are you in?
Yes.
Mouth-watering medallions.
Plus, you get the beautiful view, right?
Your lake is right there. It's so good.
Are those the medallions that were won by the chefs?
Yes.
The award-winning chefs?
Yes.
Like my medallion?
Yes.
Is it making your mouth water?
They saute them up, and you can chew on them. They're so delicious. Pat McGann is here. He's performing at Zany's. When exactly, Pat? It says May 31st through June the 2nd, and then June 5th through 8th. Could that be true?
That is correct.
All right.
This weekend,
fun.
Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I just heard the Saturday 9 o'clock is sold out.
Oh.
But we got some tickets available still for the early show on Friday and the 7 o'clock show on Saturday.
What's your process for new material? Everyone has a different way of doing it. Some people just work it in. Some people say to the audience, I'm going to try some new material.
Yeah, yeah,
tell
yeah.
me what you think. What do you do?
I try to do it after I build up some goodwill, like maybe like at the 15-minute mark if I'm doing like a longer set.
Yeah.
And then I know I can like, if I lose them, I can back it up with some other stuff. It's tough sometimes doing new stuff when I'm with Sebastian just because the venues are huge. You're in the moment. You get caught up in that moment.
Sure.
And then I'll talk to him after. And he's like, just do the
really?
New stuff. Like, yeah, and he's right because they're not there to see me. I mean, just go out and do it. And so I've been getting better at trying that because
yeah.
I'm not – it's hard to get out. When I come home, I like to be home, you know, and I still try and hustle and hit the, you know, mics in town. And
oh, yeah?
Do guest spots when yeah. I can. But it is difficult, you know. So I'm trying to try on stage, and then I write a ton, put notes in my phone, and then I just think about, like, I'm trying this newer thing about, we just went to an indoor water park with our kids, and I've been trying to, like, mess with that a little bit.
Oh, that's
just
fun.
About how horrible those places are, and just kind of roll the dice on hepatitis. And
40% of people, this was just in the news,
yeah.
relieve themselves in a pool.
Oh,
so
oh really?
Put that that's in fun. Your bit.
Yeah. See? I'm always learning, always getting new stuff.
So how do you practice? I know you bring some of it out when you're on stage. It's great to do it when you're opening for Sebastian. You're right. They're there to see him. But do you stand in front of a mirror? Do you do it in your
no.
car? How do you do? I mean,
I just do it on stage and then I voice record it. And then I need to get better at listening to him because I record a lot. And then I start listening to it. And like, I don't want to listen to myself. But you, if you listen to your sets, you can grow a ton because you're committing it to memory. You're hearing where the laughs are. And then you can think about it, what you can add there. And I think that's huge, listening to your own sets.
Have you had this experience where you write something and you say, well, this can't, look at this. I've created gold. This cannot
oh, yeah.
miss.
Yeah.
And then you do it from an audience and they're
oh,
not buying
all the time.
It at all.
All the time. I mean, I think it's probably like, you know, taking swings in baseball. Like if 3 out of the 10 things you write connect, you're good.
Yeah.
You know?
Do you give up? Like if something fails, do you give up on it or do you rework it and try it again somewhere
else? I have tried forever. I had this one bit. My dad, when we used to go on vacation, my dad used to, and all in good fun, but he would give out this like worst vacationer award, like at the end of the day.
Really?
Yeah. And we did it one time. I was on a road trip with my buddies, like 4 of us who drove out to California, and we did it too. And it starts fights and everyone gets pissed off. But you like, at the end of the day, like, yeah, you bitched about lunch.
You win.
You complained about all the walking. You're the worst vacationer. So I love that as a premise and a concept, but I've never really, and I've toyed with it, you know?
Yeah.
And I've never really been able to like have it take off in the stand-up.
That's
but it's funny because it is a funny
sure.
premise. It's a funny...
But people can relate to that. I am the worst vacationer in my family on every trip, but as you were saying that, I'm like...
Oh. Yeah, I got to revisit it again. But that's the other thing. You use it like... everything, right? Like,
yeah.
I'm talking about trips we went on when I was a kid that I never thought I would use,
right?
You know,
and there they are.
Yeah.
Does your family like being part of your act, or do they not like being part of your act?
They do like
they do?
It if it's true, right? I mean,
yeah.
if it's based in reality, like I pick on my wife a ton. She doesn't care as long as it's true.
Yeah.
My kids are now starting to get. You know, my daughter, she came to one of my shows, and she's 7. And afterwards, she's like, Mom does not sound like that.
Oh.
Like, how you talk like Mom is not. And and I had a joke about my daughter asking me a question. She's like, I asked you that like 2 years ago. I know. I need some new stuff.
Do they ever say, this better not show up in your stand? If you do this in your stand-up, and just
yeah, we
it.
Say not for air yeah. in our families.
Oh, they say sometimes. Sometimes, yeah. But not usual.
Yeah.
I've been doing this joke about my great-grandma that I kind of feel odd about.
Why?
Odd why?
It's just strange. It's she was awesome, right? She's
yeah.
born in Ireland, came here.
Is she no longer with us?
She's no longer with
this
us. She lived to be 103.
Oh.
Yeah,
oh.
God
she
bless
was phenomenal.
Her soul.
We had a good connection. But I'm not political at all, but I saw this article about white supremacists giving politicians money and
yeah.
they force them to give it back. I mean, they should give it back, right?
Yeah.
Because you should not take money from racists.
Right.
And that's like, you know, but companies do. Like
yeah.
imagine if Walmart didn't take money from racists. They'd be what if we had to give all the money back? You know, that we took from, I would have been at my first communion party, like talking to my great grandma, like, hey, I love that you're here, but I can't accept this check. Which is not that true about my great grandmother, was not like an overtly like prejudiced
times
person.
Times were different, though.
But times were different, and you know.
Would you do that joke if she were still alive and at the performance? Like, if she was there, would you, I can't do that joke about my grandmother being a heart surprise.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, at this point, maybe I would. Not when I had started 10 years ago, five years ago.
But now you're
ago.
More, you got TV credits now. You go, hey, grandma.
Well, I just feel like, you know, it's got to be the truth. And that's where comedy is right now.
Right.
It is the really only places you're getting the truth.
Is it harder to do, because of the political correctness that is America, is it harder to do your job now or is it not?
Not me. I'm not, like I said, I'm not very political. I think I can sense that if something comes up or like through crowd work or through something, if it comes up or seems to be political or I watch another comic, you could feel it in the room.
Sure.
You definitely can.
Yeah. A lot of groaning now.
Yeah. And it's just like, and there's so many experts doing it. And when I say that, I mean like these guys that have, these men and women that have TV shows that have staff of like 30 writers. 40, yeah. Why do you want to compete with that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're trying to write material that you can do for a while, you know?
Right.
And it's the time frame that it exists for is so short.
Yep.
Like, to put that effort. So I just, this is not my thing. I don't like to go that way.
And a lot of people like to escape the political situation right now anyway. They want to go out and have a good time.
Yeah, exactly. Just want to go out and have a great time. And so I try and keep it there. But I do like to be truthful. And I think that's where comedy is right now. And
yep. Yep.
It's fun. It's booming right now, comedy, I think.
We're so happy for your success. We really are. You're a good guy and funny, and everything's
thanks,
going your
Bill.
Way. And
thank
it should
you.
Be
thanks,
that way.
Wendy.
Pat McGann, go see him at Zany's. Thanks, Pat. Say that one more time. So
you guys are the greatest, and I want all your listeners to come out and see me this weekend.
Oh, little hidden plug at the end. That was very nice.
That worked, though.
Yep. Zany's.com has your ticket information. Go see Pat McGann. Thanks, Pat. We'll take a quick break, and then more show.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He's in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We had a little technical gaffe in the producer's booth.
A little clip from Fibber McGee and Molly, heard weeknights here on WGN.
Someone opened the closet.
Yep.
That was great. What did they call him? A Foley artist back then?
Yes.
I like it.
Yes. Dr. John Duffy joins us right now to make sound effects about the human mind. John, a couple of questions from stories in the news since we last talked to you.
Yeah.
All right. The first one is we lost Bill Buckner the other day.
Yeah.
Bill Buckner, an amazing ball player for two decades, but every mention of Bill Buckner mentions one incident where a ball went between Bill Buckner's legs and helped cost the Boston Red Sox a World Series.
Correct.
From a psychological standpoint, what can a minute like that do to a human being? Bill Buckner or otherwise, this is a guy who was so good at what he did, but he made one mistake, and then everywhere he went for the next several years, people would bring it up to him. What does that do to somebody?
I was talking to a colleague of mine about this, and it's kind of the first Bartman moment, right? You know, but he's a player, and there's massive expectations that he do well, and the game's over, right?
Bartman is way less fair for him.
For sure. For sure. But this was the first kind of like wildly vilified guy. And it was a very high stakes moment. And I don't think you ever get past assimilating that moment. No matter what, you're a Hall of Famer. You make it in a couple of different cities. A lot of things go well in your career. But in almost any career, if you have that moment where it's like, this is my job, it's very, very simple. Buckner himself argued, like, this is the fundamental. This is the one thing I should do without even thinking about
right.
it. And somehow I got in my head, you know, and I didn't keep the glove down and I paid the price, right? So I think a lot of us can relate in some remote way, not in as kind of a very public way, but we've had moments where we thought, this did not go the way I was hoping it would go. This was really, really dark or really, really ugly or completely contrary to what people expect of me.
Yes.
I think it's really, really hard to get beyond. In Buckner's case, I think in large part because in not just an obituary, but in every story, I would imagine every radio interview, every television interview he ever did, this was the first thing that people thought of.
Yeah,
ESPN was getting a hard time the other day because they opened with this as opposed to, like, you know, this is a Hall of Famer. This guy had an amazing 22-year career. Really, it was about, like, the ball going through the leg. So this is what the lasting legacy is. And I don't know if you can ever really resolve and reconcile that, wow, I worked so hard my whole life to do well in this game, and this moment is what we're going to focus on.
I always equated it with, remember how when you were a kid on the Wide World of Sports, they would show the thrill of victory, and then during the agony of defeat portion of that, they showed a skier who went off the ramp.
Yeah.
And I always thought, that guy could be the greatest skier in the world, but from now on, he is the agony of defeat. That guy is losing.
But it's a memorable point in time that we remember. I mean, there's always that kid in school that always ate pace, so you're always going to think of that.
Right.
There's just something to pin on them to go, oh, that's the guy or girl who did that.
Well, and it's human nature, right? We're drawn to stuff that falls beyond the norm, and the norm is Bill Buckner picks up that ball, wins the game. You know what I mean? They win the World Series, it's over.
Right.
As opposed to being vilified in Boston for years and years and years.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, it's kind of a heartbreaking story. My hope for him and his family is that they were able to integrate the entire career and that this was a footnote as opposed to the other way around, which is, I think, how we're presenting it right now.
Yes.
And it looked like he let it go when he was on that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and that was written into it.
Yes.
So that was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to escape this. May as well own it.
I think there is something to that. Like, you know, it is making light of the darkest moment. You know, that's an impressive thing to do, and it kind of shows I'm not taking myself too seriously, and it's modeling for everybody else. Don't you guys do it either. This is 1986.
Right.
It was, you know, more than 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Can we move past this finally now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this one quickly also. Mount Everest has been in the news because it's overcrowded and people are dying on Mount Everest.
Yeah.
Because of the overcrowding. Do you think that this will make people want to do it more or less? To the average person who loves a challenge, are people going to go, wow, it's so dangerous, now I really need to do it? And what's wrong with us if we do feel that way?
Yeah. So I actually think that there are going to be more people who are going to want to do this. Contrary to what we might think is going to happen, I think more people are going to want to do it, in large part because it's this challenge, right? And people are dying, and a lot of us think, never having been on Everest, I think I can do that, you know? And there is this element of maybe our lives as they are don't present the excitement and the thrill and the accomplishment that we want them to. And so we want that big kill. We want to be able to accomplish something extraordinary. And knowing that thousands of people have done it and now some people are dying in the wake of it, I think a lot of us feel like, oh, I think I can do that. And so the danger is, I think that we're not educated as to how to do this. So I think that's what's happening, is a lot of people who don't know where, I've heard some climbers that I've worked with call it the red line,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, if I go beyond this line, if I stay up there a moment too long, and I know on the ground what the red line is, but once I get all the way up there, there's this fog that overcomes my mind. This seriously happens. And people have described it where I think, I can spend 10 more minutes up here, or I can go a little quicker down the summit. And then you get like this kind of lung collapsing issue where you die.
Altitude disease.
Yes,
or whatever,
exactly. Yeah. Right. So, you know, if we educated ourselves better, or if we found our thrills in different ways,
yeah.
I think we might be better off. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because now this is getting to be absurd, right? There are lines going up and coming down, and somebody described it like an amusement park ride.
Yeah.
And this is not an amusement park ride. This is intended for only very few people to be able to accomplish, who have studied this and really looked into it and know where their red lines are. And I think a lot of us heading up there have no idea.
True.
Yeah.
So true. Dr. John Duffy's our guest. We'll pick this up in just a little bit. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder, clinical psychologist, show psychologist, Dr. John Duffy with him. You can find him at drjohnduffy.com. June is PTSD Awareness Month.
Correct.
Post-traumatic stress disorder. I don't think we know enough about it. It's, you know, you think of people returning from military service
right.
having it, but it can show itself in many ways. What would you like to tell us about this?
Yeah, so, right. Typically, we think this is the bastion of first responders and military service people, but it actually is much broader than that. Lately, they've come up with the term vicarious traumatization. In other words, I didn't need to be directly directly involved with the traumatic event in order to be affected by it. I see this most often in school shootings. So if there is a school shooting, for example, after Parkland, I was working with kids nowhere near Florida, right here in Chicago, who were affected, reluctant to go to school, afraid to go to school, and had a plan for with their parents. You know, I'm going to call you. You're going to have to find a way. Meet me at this door. And they were truly traumatized. They would miss some time in school, but they would be worried on an ongoing basis. And PTSD has other kind of faces as well, that some are vicarious and some are direct. And I was just thinking about some of the people I've treated, and this is not comprehensive, but I've treated people who have lost someone they love who are traumatized by that, abuse survivors, of course, car accidents, going back, 9/11 survivors, meaning just about all of us. I think if we look back collectively, we were all truly suffering from the symptoms of PTSD during that time. Some people who were involved in office school shootings. About 10 years ago, I worked with a youth hockey team. And briefly, one boy was on one team was picking on, really bullying this kid on this other team. At the end of the game, third period, few seconds left, the coach said, "Go get him, check him into the board." So he does that, you know, and I think this is pretty typical. Even youth hockey behavior is like, you know, this kid's been picking on you long enough. So he goes, he checks this kid, the team celebrates. The kid doesn't get up. He's not dead, but he has been paralyzed.
Oh.
So I worked with the team that perpetrated this, and they all met the criteria for post-trauma. And the symptoms of this stuff set in really, really fast. Like within 2 or 3 days, if you don't get to people who are suffering, as a professional, if you don't get to people who are suffering, some of the symptoms get kind of hard set and they're very difficult to undo. Whereas if you can get to them, especially in a group setting like that, talking about it, then they can start to mitigate the circumstances and move on with their lives. Still, it's difficult, but it's way better to get to people sooner. The longer you let it set, things like depression, panic issues, suicidal issues start to befall some of these kids, some of these young people and older people.
So therapy is the way to start with that.
It's the only way I know. And it's actually kind of a different kind of therapy, because it's less let's process your feelings and more like immediate incident, almost like a triage type of therapy, where it's kind of like, you know, okay, Wendy, Bill, tell me your stories. What did you experience? What happened? Does that match each other's stories? Just to start talking about it. That's the idea in a very short period of time, because we tend to clam up and want to shut down.
Now, some of these are terribly horrific, but it sounds like, you know, I know this kid who got in a car accident and he survived, didn't even really have that many injuries, but he can't drive again.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
So it could be minor things that set these off as well.
Surprisingly minor. There's an argument to be made that if you're in a vehicle that makes contact with another vehicle, it doesn't have to be hard contact like you're describing. Nobody has to get hurt. The cars don't even have to get hurt. But if the police are involved, it's traumatic. You know, so our definition of trauma has to expand in order for us to really help people manage this stuff effectively.
All right, John, I understand if somebody is involved in a situation, you mentioned a school shooting, you could be involved in the war, whatever, and you're experiencing PTSD. I understand the treatment of, you know, you've lived through this, so we're going to work around what you've lived through.
Right.
But if you weren't directly associated with it, if you're a high school kid and there's a high school shooting on the other end of the country, I understand the fear. Wow, it happened there. It could happen anywhere. But they must treat it differently. How much time is spent saying it's a million to one shot that it could happen at your school? Do they spend a lot of time doing that sort of thing or what?
Eventually.
Yeah.
The first thing that has to happen is some acknowledgement like, yes,
this is warranted.
This is warranted. This happened in a school. It could happen in your school, because kids are pragmatic these days, and they're willing to say, "Hey, Parkland feels like a fairly random event.
Yeah.
Are you really telling me there's, I go to a school with 3,000 or 4,000 kids. Are you telling me not one of us is disgruntled? Not one of us, you know, has guns in the home? It's very possible. And it's virtually impossible to tell a kid, no, that's absolutely not possible. Then you can start talking the odds. Like, you know, it's highly unlikely. Let's think of a plan for you. But let's also think about, like, moving on with your life. Regardless, right? You know, so like, even if I can't talk you out of the possibility that this could happen, you don't want to just throw your life away because of the potentiality of this.
Sure.
You know, I worked with a woman a while back who was afraid of flying, had this airplane phobia, and she said, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to be 80 and I'm not going to die in an airplane. I will have worried all this time about dying in an airplane.
Right.
And that's what I kind of, that's my pitch to these kids is you can worry about this forever, but the worry isn't going to mitigate whether it happens or not.
Yeah.
So if we have a plan, just in case it happens, which again is a slim chance, and you go on with your life, then we've got a pretty good situation, a pretty good protocol going forward.
Right.
If you're just driven by the fear that this could happen, then after a period of time, you might really be down on yourself for wasting time worrying about something that never did happen to you.
That's a great way to put it. It's hard to explain. And I know there are kids that came home and spoke to their parents and said, boy, this Parkland thing, what if it happens here? And, you know, I am not a professional, but I would think the worst thing a parent could say was, oh, it'll never happen. I mean, let them talk about it, right?
Yep. And as parents, and we're all parents, there is this inclination to say, this is not going to happen to you. We want our kids not to worry about these things, especially our younger kids, right? But to dismiss that effectively is telling them, I can't handle that kind of anxiety. You're going to have to go somewhere else with that, or just, you know, internalize it, which is not healthy for kids. So we have to be willing to hear them out. Their worst anxieties, you know, I'm afraid that this is going to happen. There's this kid in my math class. You know, he looks at me sideways. I'm afraid it's going to happen right there. And to acknowledge that and say, I totally get why that would be scary.
Sure.
That is your only starting point that's going to get you anywhere. You're absolutely right.
It's hard because you want to protect your kids and say, you know, oh, it's going to be fine, but that may be the wrong approach.
Absolutely. Right, right. And to recognize, like, even not being directly affiliated with it, you're still traumatized by it. And don't assume that because it happened 1,000 miles away that your kid is unaffected by something like this. Mm.
PTSD Awareness Month. It's going on in the month of June. We're getting a step ahead of it. Dr. John Duffy, thank you very much. Where can people reach you? And when's your new book come out?
Yeah, new book comes out in August.
All right.
And it's called Parenting the New Teen. There's a subtitle I could not possibly tell you right now because I think we're even working on it as we go. So we're going to have to probably doctor a couple of book covers. But you can find me at drjohnduffy.com.
Thanks, John, so much.
Thanks,
appreciate it.
I don't know where to begin, except I'm completely in heaven right now.
Wendy, Grant Mulvey is in trouble because I may have a new best friend. Quan Choi is here. Quan is the owner and operator of Menchie's in Schaumburg. And he has brought something that you and I discussed. Was it about a month ago?
We were on the stream on WGN Extra between noon and one, and we'll be there again today. And we started talking about a Dole Whip. And, you know, it's not fair. We can't get one unless we're in Disney. Well, it turns out that Menchie's frozen yogurt in Schaumburg on Roselle Road. This is the Dole Whip, Quan. Is it not the real deal?
Whip. It's an actual Dole Whip.
It's the exact same thing that if we were in Disney World or Disneyland.
Exactly.
And we had just been
at the Dole Plantation in Hawaii.
Or the Dole Plantation in Hawaii.
God.
If we had just been in the Enchanted Tiki Room at Disney and we wanted a pineapple Dole Whip, this is what we would be having, the same thing that you have in your store.
Exactly.
Wow. Yep.
How did this happen, though?
It's a miracle.
We were told it was only in near the Tiki Room. So Dole said okay, Mickey said it was okay. How does this happen?
Well, I guess Menchie's headquarters, you know, came to agreement with Dole to serve the Dole pineapple, which was the first Dole flavor we have. We have a few more nowadays, but then 4 years, about 4 or 5 years ago, we started doing the Dole floats.
And how did we not know of this?
It became like a cult following.
I didn't want you to know, Wendy.
You were hogging it all
yes,
for yourself, Mickey?
It's mine, not yours.
Well, now you have to share.
I'm telling you, when I was a kid, now Wendy's story and mine are the exact opposite. She's been to Disney and never had one. I've never taken a trip to Disneyland or Disney World where this wasn't a big part of my trip. I love
my last trip, you like 3 or 4 years ago, I had one and realized what I had been missing my whole life. How many of these do you eat a day? Be honest.
In the beginning, it was almost daily. It's a meal replacement.
Oh, right. I love
it. I put pineapples or, you know, and a cherry
vitamin
on top.
Vitamin C. It's good for you.
All right. I'm embarrassed to say that we did not know that Menchie's Frozen Yogurt in Schaumburg had these. Do every Menchie's have these?
Yeah, every Menchie has a ability to get it in. It's like it's all part of a rotation.
Yeah,
we have Menchie's, we have so many different flavors.
Yeah.
In my store, I always dedicate a machine to dairy-free, so that's where the dough goes in.
And the difference between the dairy-free version and the dairy-filled version is what?
There's no dairy.
I know there's no dairy, but
yeah, there's no
can
dairy
you
in
tell
the dough.
Can you taste it and know the difference?
There isn't dairy version of the dough.
Oh, there isn't.
No.
Huh.
I know it seems
it tastes like there would be
sorbet. Yeah, it's creamy.
How are you pulling that off? What's in there that's creating that?
It's a Menchie secret.
Oh, all right. That's fine. I don't want trouble.
Yeah.
All right. I'm sorry. This is the worst interview I've ever done because all I'm doing is eating my Dole Whip. Yes.
So good. So good. You have this year round, not just in the summertime?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did we not know of this?
I don't know.
We were born and bred here. I grew up in Brookfield, you in Oak Forest. I mean, we're here. How do we not know this? And we need to get the word out there. Can you go to Menchie's.com and check the location nearest you and call and see if they have it?
Absolutely. Yeah. So.
All right. So the original Dole Whip sorbets were pineapple, correct?
Correct.
And it's just a sorbet. And then I have a float, so that's what I get in Disney as well.
Yeah.
You just pour Dole pineapple juice over this and make
makes it like a smoothie consistency.
God, so good. Yeah. Help me with this.
Sure.
Pineapple came first, then they did orange, and I'm trying to think if on Disney they do other flavors. It might just be orange and pineapple. It might be.
I thought it was just pineapple.
No, there's orange in Adventureland.
Yeah, I think they just came out a few years ago at Disney to serve the orange. I'm not sure exactly, but
They make bananas too. Is there a banana one?
Well, they added, there's 4 flavors that they added this year for some reason. I'm not sure what they are, but I know they made a bit. There was a huge press release about a month or so ago. That's why we found you guys, because we did the press release of the 4 new flavors, and then Wendy Googled to see if there were anywhere near, and your name came up.
Yeah, last year we introduced the 2 new flavors, the Dole Lemon and the Dole Lime at Menchie's, and it was actually feature for a month at all the Menchie stores. So
I'm just thinking if I put a little vodka in here, this would really be good on a weekend if you're 21 and over.
Right.
Rum.
Quinn, are you allowed to comment? You are allowed to comment
better,
on that.
Actually, all right, that's a good one.
Why would that work better? Just so it would blend with the tropical flavor a little bit better?
Exactly.
Yeah?
Exactly.
But you've never done that in the store ever?
No, never at the store.
But right outside the store.
What's the history
at
of
home
Menchie's?
In my backyard.
When did Menchie's even get started?
2005.
God, I've never even heard of it.
Yeah, the founders, Adam and Dana Caldwell, were boyfriend and girlfriend at the time. And then they loved going to frozen yogurt shops. And he used to call her a mensch, which is a Yiddish term for a good person.
Right.
And then as they developed their branding and things like that, it became Menchie's.
Yeah.
And then, I love it.
Yeah, there's a...
They also own Nudges. Which is for people who complain. Yeah.
I own that one.
That's right. Wendy's CEO of Nudges. And you guys, you opened your store how long ago?
March 2013. So we're in our 7th year of business.
Congratulations.
Now. Congratulations.
Thank you. Did you have a history in this sort of thing? Were you a restaurateur prior
to
this?
No, I used to design flight deck controls for aircraft.
I could see the connection.
Yeah, it seemed a natural line of progression.
Exactly, from flight to froyo.
Wait, Quan, so what was going on that you thought, I got to take a gamble in this after doing what you did prior? What happened there?
I just wanted to get out of the corporate world.
Yeah?
And, you know,
this
we were
is way
kinda
more
young
fun.
At that time still, so we're like, hey, let's take the risks, and you know, you never know until you do it.
This is a lot more fun.
And if you don't do it, you're going to have regrets, like what if?
Yeah.
Well, good for you. I'm glad it's worked out. His name is Quan Choi. He's a franchise owner at Menchie's Frozen Yogurt in Schaumburg. Now, aside from the pineapple Dole Whip, which I am having, you brought in a lime and vanilla combo. You like the lime.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. And I brought some frozen yogurt. cookie sandwiches that you guys could
Froyo try. Froyo cookies.
And then I made you guys a special cake. We do Froyo cakes in-store. We make them by hand in-store. Mm.
And people can order these because the WGN logo's on it in our names, although I'm going to eat yours.
That's fine. That's
all right. I just wanted to have my name on it.
I tried to get a picture of you guys to put on there, but
oh, that would have been scary.
We don't. For some reason, Wendy and I don't translate to frozen yogurt. No one knows why.
We look better when it melts a little bit.
Just a little bit.
So people listening can stop in and get a personalized. What's in that cake?
This one here is a vanilla cake base with a layer of chocolate Froyo, chopped Oreos in the middle, and then a layer of vanilla Froyo. And people could just customize it with any flavors they want, any combination. And I've seen some weird combinations, but they claim they loved it.
What's the weirdest combination you saw?
Where it's like a sorbet and like a Nutella or something like that. You know,
a little challenging.
Yeah, a little challenging. You know, the kids get a kick out of it because they like creating their own
cake. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Know? I've heard people say that to own an ice cream store or a store that sells frozen yogurt in Chicago can be difficult for about half of the year. Do you find that to be true, or are you sell it all year round?
My store is open all year round. I think all the Menchie's are open all year round. And we get our loyalists. When we hit the polar vortex, we were closed for... said that 1 or 2 days. And
it was bad.
When I came back that following day on the answering machine, there were so many, are you guys open? You know, so people have cabin fever.
And, yeah.
You know, Froyo's not really like ice cream, you know, so.
I like frozen yogurt a lot. Is it healthier for you? Is it less calories than ice cream?
Yeah, it's either low fat or non-fat, half the sugar of ice cream. And with Menchie's, we have our own private label.
Oh, you do?
Yogurt, and we have our own California dairy. With smiley cows, we like to call them, with a RBSC free ranging. Yeah.
What's with people putting gummy bears in their frozen yogurt? That doesn't belong in frozen yogurt.
That's like one of our most popular types.
Gummy bears is? Yeah. Really?
It does get hard a little bit.
With
but,
kids, though, right? An adult both. Would never do. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
I've seen grandparents put it on there.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I guess it makes them become a kid again, you know?
Oh, yeah.
That's the nice thing about Menchie's. Our mission is we want to make you smile. So
Quan, that's a very positive way of looking. I would yell at people if they did that. If it was my store. Hey, what's wrong with you? Get the gummy bears out of there.
This is really, so the Dole Whip is available year-round. This isn't just at your store pretty much all the time. At other locations, you need to call and find out if they have it.
Yeah. So my store, I put it 1 to 2 weeks a month year-round. So,
my God.
Just call ahead and make sure it's in there. And we get a lot of calls for it. We get families driving from Rockford, you know, on the weekends.
Oh, I can see that.
Load
I could definitely
van.
See that.
I don't need
that.
To go to Disney anymore.
No,
I just
it's right
tell
there.
Schomburg.
Well, Wendy's going to ask you to dress up like a pirate and a president and stuff like that for the full Disney experience.
And the funny thing, my nickname is Mickey growing up.
So. Oh, it was? Wow.
Wow, wow, it's come that full pay off. Circle.
Exactly.
That's so paid off. Yeah. And you guys rotate the flavors every week or every month or what?
Could be daily. Yogurt's a good bacteria, and we need to keep it that way.
What are the standby, I can't get rid of this flavor, people will get mad at me?
Cake batter, which I brought outside.
Yeah.
Chocolate vanilla and our original tart. So,
oh.
Yep, those four are almost always good. There. Yeah.
Your original tart?
Mm-hmm.
What is that?
It's like a base yogurt flavor. It's really good with like fruit and granola.
All right, that sounds good.
It's so funny how flavors that didn't exist, like when Wendy and I are probably a little bit older than you, but there are flavors like nobody had cake batter flavored ice cream or frozen yogurt, and now it's everywhere.
It's everywhere, yeah. Yeah, you have to try.
Strange?
You have to grab a cup out there before it all goes away.
All right, if anyone's listening right now, you can go to Menchie's.com and find the location nearest you and call and make sure they have the Dole Whip set up. Or you can just stop by the Menchie's Frozen Yogurt in Schaumburg. It's on Roselle Road. It's in a mini mall, a little strip mall.
Yeah, it's next to the Schaumburg Library with the pond. There's concerts in the back around the pond. And plays.
God, go
starting
get a Dole Whip.
And sounds like heaven.
Menchie's.com is where to go. His name is Quan Choi, franchise owner. Thank you so much, and good luck to you.
Yeah, and we'll always post our flavors on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Menchie's Schaumburg Town Square.
Thank you, Quan. Can you come back tomorrow?
Of course.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
You got my number now.
All right. Come by every day.
Thank you.
All right. A little break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right. I want to play this tape for you. This is from Jimmy Kimmel's show last night. This is one of those great examples of, you know, you always say, are the kids today, are they getting smarter than ever or not? I hope this will help you decide. Jimmy Kimmel's point last night was kids now are brought up where their clock is probably digital, where it just says the number of what time it is. And can they read a clock just by looking at the face, an old kind of clock? So that's what they did. They set up a clock and they had people come by, and they asked kids what time it was based on just the old kind of clocks, you know, and here's the results. Listen.
Well, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Can you look at this and tell me what time it is?
Oh, no. No, I can't. It is 4:37. Is that correct? It's 45.
Chris, let me ask you this. Where do you go to college?
UT Arlington.
You want to say anything to your teachers back in college?
Not at all, because they're going to be so disappointed that I have not read a clock like this since elementary school. Let me see. Okay.
Oh, man. It is 8:17. No?
AM or PM?
Now, that last kid, and I say kid, but he was either like a high school senior or a freshman in college. He was about that age. He said 8:10 or something like that. It was 3:46 or 3:46. He wasn't even close. He didn't get any of it right. But in each one of these instances, except one, and I know that, I know they edited it because you got to hear 6 or 7 kids and only one got the correct time. So I'm sure plenty of other kids did. But for the most part, the look on their face as they stared into a face of the clock and realized I have to use my brain to calculate this was horrifying.
Although we were taught it so much in elementary school that you don't even have to think. You just look, 5 to 12.
Right.
But if you haven't been taught that.
But wouldn't you think a school would take a day? Like, I still remember in second grade when they taught us how to do it. And then every day at the beginning of class, the teacher would pick another kid in the class and they'd say, Chris, what time is it right now? And Chris would have to look up and say, you know, it's 8:45.
And they still have, like, a clock on the wall in all the classrooms.
Right.
But no kids use it because they just look at their phone or their Apple Watch. My son my youngest son asked for a watch for Christmas. It was some cool, like, I don't remember. He was little. And I got him the digital one, and he complained. He said, no, I don't.
You want the original.
I want the one with the face on
it. Yeah.
And I'm like, do you know how to use it? He did.
But doesn't what does that say about us? That, and again, I know it.
The times have changed.
I know, without a doubt, times have changed. But isn't it one of those things that you should have the backup plan in your head of knowing how to look at a clock? If most of those kids were like 17, 18, 19 years old, and they just stared in horror at a clock going, oh, somebody asked me what time it is. I can't decipher what time it is by looking at a clock.
But they always have their phone on them so they could just look at their phone.
Because
I also talk about editing. You know, when I learned how to edit audio tape, it was actual tape with a razor blade and a splicing block and little tape. And
sure. Sometimes
you'd do it backwards and you'd have to redo it. But I knew how to do it. Now when you do it digitally, a lot of these producers have never done
right.
it with actual tape.
It's streamlined,
tape.
But your average person on a daily basis doesn't. That's a skill set,
yeah,
for, depending on what you do for a living.
As alleged by the grand jury in an indictment, Russian.
Good point there, too. But you, for real life, you kind of always have to know what time it is. And yes, there are shortcuts. Your phone will tell you. But it wouldn't be a bad idea to know how to tell time if you're 17 or 18 years old.
No one's going to listen
to
you.
Horrible.
Gramps.
I know. All right, we'll take a break. Wendy and I are headed toward the stream for the bonus hour, or you can keep it right here.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Eric Rung from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Again, I would love to tell you, if you would like to get an Dole Whip, and this is the original pineapple. I got the pineapple with the pineapple juice.
Yes.
You can go to the
way the good Lord intended.
Oh, it's like
so
sunshine
good.
In my mouth.
It's so good.
Menchie's Frozen Yogurt in Schaumburg, they are for sure the only ones at this point that I know that have it on Roselle Road. But you can go to Menchie's.com and find the one near you. Just call them and ask them if they have a Dole Whip. Is this covered in the Blues Brothers movie?
Orange Whip, Orange Whip, Orange Whip.
Yep. Just curious.